Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Tidal Energy, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. You are joining Garrett, my co-host, and I, my name is Simon, in the studio today for the third of our April newsworthy clips. These are short, current events articles that introduce you to language you wouldn't normally find in an English class or textbook. Garrett, tell us, what's the title of our lesson for today?
Our title is A Rising Tide for Tidal Energy.
Cleverness. Cleverness right in there. A rising tide? Tidal energy? What is a tide?
Well, the tide is the changing level of the ocean's waters throughout the day, and it's associated with where the moon is.
That's true. Sometimes you go to, a fishing port-like tourist destination. There's beautiful fishing boats bobbing on the water. Other times you go to that same spot and all the boats are sitting on mud because there's no water. That's the low tide. It's gone out. And at times when they're bobbing happily in the water, that's the high tide. So the water comes in and goes out. This is called the tide. Tidal energy is a term that, implies you are making energy or getting power, electricity in this case, from the movement of those tides. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. This is one of the, less frequently discussed sort of green energy technologies, right? That would be a good way to kind of describe
this.
Yeah,
we have now talked about it on a couple of our platforms here at the company, though. Mm-hmm. So it is an interesting thing to consider.
Honestly, though, gets a lot less attention than wind and solar power.
Definitely.
Right? Definitely. So here we go. Tidal energy. Do you know of any places that use tidal energy at this point?
I do because of our article.
Oh, is that a studio classroom article?
I'm talking about this article we're going to talk about today, actually.
Oh. Well, you mentioned it had appeared, reference to it
right.
had appeared across our platform.
I know there have been a lot. We've talked about other plans for this to be a potential future of renewable energy.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked much about actual implementation.
You've got the key word there, potential. This is, I spend a little more time in the energy world than some of our other coworkers here. But there are a number of these technologies. Like we talk a lot about biofuel, which is sort of another one that could be described with potential. And geothermal power, meaning using sort of the heat of the Earth's core to make power, that's another one that's got lots of potential. But really, when we're looking at green energy at the moment, probably the best developed one is hydropower, from water.
Definitely.
But now solar panels have come a long way and wind power is, those are the big dominant ones. Nonetheless, today we're going to be learning about tidal energy and our lesson there, a rising tide for tidal energy, that idea of the tide rising, meaning the water coming in, when you're talking about a tide, actually implies some things. Like in English, we have a number of idioms, such as a rising tide raises all boats.
Hmm.
Have you heard that expression?
I have heard that phrase.
Yep. And what does it mean?
Well, it means that as things are going well, it doesn't just benefit one party, one individual, one company. It benefits everyone.
Yeah. So the idea there, you would use this kind of phrase in relation to things like the economy. So if there's been a big investment in one area of the economy, you would use the phrase a rising tide raises all boats because, when some workers are earning more money, they're going to spend more money and then everybody ends up earning more money. The money gets shared around. That would be an example of all the boats rising. So here when they say a rising tide for tidal energy, what it implies is that the chances of tidal energy becoming a big player are increasing. The trend towards tidal energy is growing. That's kind of what is being suggested here. Listeners, we're going to do two readings today, and we have Linda C. to read them for us. Let's jump into those readings. But first, if you have your April magazine, I would encourage you to open it up so you can read along as you listen. Let's do that now.
A rising tide for tidal energy? Tidal energy, generated from the natural rise and fall of ocean tides, is one of the most predictable forms of renewable energy. Unlike wind or solar, which fluctuate based on weather, tides follow gravitational cycles that are easy to forecast. Despite this reliability and growing interest in clean energy, tidal power still accounts for only a small share of global electricity production. There are three main ways to capture tidal energy: tidal barrages, low dams that trap water; tidal stream turbines, underwater turbines placed in fast-moving currents; and dynamic tidal power systems, which use coastal water pressure differences. One of the most recent breakthroughs happened in early 2025, when Proteus Marine Renewables installed Japan's first commercial-scale tidal turbine off the coast of Goto City. The 1.1 megawatt device, anchored to the seabed, shows how far the technology has come. Tidal energy offers several key advantages. It has high energy density, doesn't depend on weather or sunlight, and has less impact on land and views than wind or solar farms. As Inc. magazine's Chris Stokel Walker put it, tidal power is more reliable than solar. Why aren't we using it?
All right, so we're introduced here to tidal energy. We're sort of given a definition, if you will. It's energy that is generated from the natural rise and fall of ocean tides, and it is one of the most predictable forms of renewable energy. Now, when they say predictable there, what do they mean?
We know that it will be available. It's very different from something like solar energy, where you don't know whether or not there will be sun. Wind energy, you don't know when there will be wind, but we always know that there will be waves and tides in certain places.
It's true. They come in a very, according to very predictable schedules, right? A lot of people, I think, as we have moved in our own power grid towards more renewable energy, I think a lot of people do not appreciate how much work has to go into things like weather prediction. Because when those forms of alternative energy are really producing energy, they're producing a lot of energy, and it's difficult to accommodate it within the broader electrical system. There's like so much electricity being pumped into the system at a limited number of access points that you can really overload the system and create a dangerous situation if you don't expand the entire system to accommodate it. And so this idea of predictable is hugely invaluable because it means you know exactly how much to expand your grid capacity. You don't have to overexpand it just to be safe, right? And so there's like a real benefit to this kind of thing, making me a big fan of tidal energy. Listeners, you're gonna maybe get indications of that throughout this article. It tells us that unlike wind and solar, which fluctuate, now, Garrett, you basically described that, right? They go up and down based on weather. Tides follow gravitational cycles. Now, you mentioned that they were caused by the moon, right?
That's how I understand it.
Yeah, the moon affects the Earth's gravity and causes this shift. They are easy to forecast. Yes, if you go on a weather app, you know, you can find all kinds of data other than the weather, right? Like you can find the time the sun's going to come up in the morning, the time it's going to go down. You can find the tides. And one of the things my wife always comments on is how the weather report is never right in certain places.
I feel that way sometimes too.
Yeah, particularly when you have mountains involved, because it makes weather much harder to predict, like if it's going to rain or not, things like that. But one of the things you can predictably count on in those apps is sunrise, sunset, and the tide times. So, again, just very predictable cycles that are easy to forecast. Despite this reliability and growing interest in clean energy, tidal power still accounts for only a small share of global electricity production. So it's not a big thing at this time. Well, Garrett, as we get into the second paragraph, we're told that there are three main ways to capture tidal energy. I'm going to let you deal with this because you're probably the only one who knows how to pronounce this next word here.
Yeah,
I had to look this up. You did some research on it specifically.
Sure. And now, normally when we see B-A-R-R-A-G-E, we think of the word barrage.
Barrage, that's what I think.
Yeah, it could be like a military type term.
Like shooting a lot of shells at the enemy.
Cannonballs, mortars, that kind of thing. Well, here it's a very different meaning and it's pronounced differently. These are tidal barrages because they bar one thing from getting to another area. These are, here we see low dams that trap water.
Well, I suppose if you said tidal barrage, because really any forceful action against something is a barrage, right? So you could say like the harbor experiences a constant tidal barrage, but then you would be talking about the waves constantly hitting the harbor entrance.
There's a barrage against the barrage.
Yeah. So you have to be very careful with this term. This barrage, it is describing a dam that traps water. Basically, that's one way you can generate energy from the tide. A second way is what? I'll let you pronounce this word too, because there's a regional variation
in
the way Linda pronounced it and
I
you pronounced it.
Linda might have pronounced it the way you do. I would say tidal stream turbines.
Yeah, I actually pronounce it both ways in different situations.
Okay.
But I realize that that's probably ridiculous.
Well, just the pronunciation turban that we heard earlier, I think of that
as... You say turbine, right?
Yeah, turban is something you wear on your head.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you, to be clear, Linda said turban.
That's what it sounded like to
me.
And
you say turbine.
Yes.
I say both.
Okay.
In different situations. But nonetheless, in this situation, I would say turbine like you.
Okay.
Okay, so this second way they can do this is with stream turbines, which are underwater... I'm trying to decide which way to say it this time. I want to be fair to both you and Linda. The stream turbines, which are underwater turbines, placed in fast-moving currents. And then the third one is dynamic tidal power systems, which use coastal water pressure differences. So we're not really given a description of how any of these work here, but we're given the names of the three technologies, if you will, that can capture electricity from this. So why is it, if this is such a wonderful, predictable thing, why is it we are not seeing more of it? It is not specifically said here, but what I would say is the tidal barrage, meaning it's really rough to put things out that are mechanical or man-made, human-made. You put them out in an ocean tide and have them be strong enough and durable enough to last for quite a while. So there's like engineering challenges to that, I would say, that make it a more difficult thing. Nonetheless, there has been a breakthrough, meaning a development in the technology. And they get into that in the third paragraph there. What is the breakthrough, Garrett?
Well, this happened in early 2025. Proteus Marine Renewables, a certain company, installed Japan's first commercial-scale tidal turbine off the coast of Goto City. It's a 1.1 megawatt device. It's anchored to the seabed, and it shows how far the technology has come.
Yeah. People sometimes, I think, don't give enough credit to these sorts of demonstration projects in the electricity world. Like at the moment, one of the things that you'll notice people have been sort of developing is small microgrids. I don't know if you've heard that term, but they'll set it up in a place like around a school or a community center in a remote area where it's easy for the power to go out if there's a typhoon or something. And it basically keeps the lights on in the school, keeps the communications running, lets you charge your phone. Like, it's not a huge amount of electricity. And so people tend to think like, oh, it's just kind of like for show. But really what is going on there is they're testing out and demonstrating a concept of the technology so that they can kind of scale it up. And so it is pretty significant here, this development, particularly because of one word that they use here, commercial scale. So this is not just an experiment or a demonstration project. If it's commercial scale, what does that mean?
Well, it's intended to be something that makes money, essentially. Yeah. And so presumably they're producing energy and then maybe selling it to the city.
1.1 megawatts, which is not a huge amount of electricity as power plants go, but it is not an insignificant amount either. It's a notable amount of electricity. And it's anchored to the seabed, meaning it is somehow attached to the seabed by like a chain or a cable, something like that. The seabed there meaning the bottom of the ocean. And so all of this shows that the technology has developed a great deal. Okay, tidal energy offers several key advantages. I'm pretty sure I have listed some of them. It has high energy density. It doesn't depend on weather or sunlight and has less impact on land and views than wind or solar farm. So when it has high energy density, what I think that effectively means is there is a lot of energy in those tides. Like you can get a lot of energy out of the tides because that moving water is using a lot of force, energy, you know, in sort of a scientific sort of sense. So you're not trying to collect energy over a large space. There's a lot of concentrated energy right there. It doesn't depend on weather or sunlight. Why not? Well, because it depends on the moon, right? And
yeah.
Gravity. It's just always there regardless of whether the sun is shining or the wind is blowing or whatever. And this is an interesting one. It has less impact on land and views. What do we mean by that? Less impact on land and views.
Well, you can think of some of these other forms of producing energy. You need to buy up a piece of land. You need to build up the structures there. And you don't need to do that with these because you just put them underneath in the ocean. No one is trying to build their home there.
It's kind of it can be an eyesore. Like you could see how people would complain. One of the things that we have seen start to happen with solar power is that obviously like solar power needs large areas. So one of the things they can do with solar power is float it on a water reservoir.
Hmm.
You know, have floating solar panels effectively. But those water reservoirs are basically lakes that people like to hike around and, you know, jog around and stuff. And all of a sudden you're just jogging around a solar farm. And so you can see how people who are used to considering these places scenic sites might not like the presence of the solar panels. The same way, big wind, towers, those propellers that are flying.
I think you call them turbines as well.
Turbines, there you go.
But I don't mind seeing big solar panels on like homes. I think those look fine. But when you're walking around and you see giant wind turbines, they don't look nice.
There you go. So in the case of the tidal energy, you don't see anything. It's like in the water, kind of anchored to the ocean floor or whatever. So it doesn't ruin your view, effectively. As Inc. Magazine's Chris Stokel Walker put it, tidal power is more reliable than solar. Why aren't we using it? Good question, Inc. Magazine. Let's get into that in our next reading.
The answer largely concerns cost and location. Tidal systems are expensive to build and maintain, especially when placed offshore. They also only work well in coastal areas with strong, steady tides, limiting where projects can go. Additionally, there are environmental concerns about how turbines might affect marine life and sediment flow. In the U.S., permitting and regulatory processes can be slow and confusing, making it difficult to get new projects started. Local opposition from fishing communities and unclear jurisdiction over coastal waters have also slowed progress in key regions like the Pacific Northwest and parts of New England. Still, momentum is building. Scotland, France, and Canada have invested in pilot projects, and the U.S. Department of Energy is researching opportunities along American coastlines. New modular turbine designs are helping lower costs and speed up installation, an important factor to the continued development of tidal energy.
All right. So we were asked a question before that reading. Tidal power is more reliable than solar. Why aren't we using it? Here we get the answer. And we're basically told there are two reasons, right? What are the two reasons, Garrett?
That is cost and location. Tidal systems are expensive to build and maintain, especially when placed offshore. Simon, where else would you put them?
I'm not prepared to answer that question. What I would say, though, is that this is what I was referring to earlier. There are tremendous engineering challenges in building something that can basically withstand the tide. Now, you know, I mean, you think waves, they're not that big a deal. But if you really want to exhaust yourself, try swimming in open water in comparison to a swimming pool, right? Like people who can very easily swim a couple of kilometers in a pool can really struggle to swim 1 kilometer in the ocean because waves are just an exhausting, unending pounding that you're sort of taking. And so the same is true for this sort of equipment. We wouldn't want to install a power system that was going to last a year or 6 months. You don't want to go to the trouble of that. And so there's a real challenge associated with building and maintaining this, especially when they're exposed offshore to all of the elements and the full power of the ocean, I suppose. They also only work well in coastal areas with strong, steady tides, because it's not just waves here, it's the rising and lowering. So they have to be in coastal areas. If you were out in the deep ocean, you wouldn't notice the tide, right? Yeah. So this limits where projects can go. And that is something, I can't remember if you mentioned this on the radio or off, but there is a problem with hydropower, like, you know, making electricity from water being released behind dams. And one of the big problems is we've run out of places
to put them. It's very effective. It's just in most places around the world where it's a good solution. We've already put it in all the places where it could be. I know, like, one of the most developed places for hydropower is somewhere like Norway.
Yeah.
There's not that many rivers left.
Aren't that many rivers? Aren't that many slopes that can handle the reservoir of water, things like that? So we're running out of locations. This is a new source of locations, even though this is also a limited range of locations, a new opportunity to make money, electricity, and money, I suppose.
And money.
Yeah, from power. Additionally, there are environmental concerns about how turbines might affect marine life and sediment flow. Yeah. Well, because they'll limit the ability of marine life to move freely.
Well, this is the part we've talked about much more on some other platforms when talking about this. Mm. And the thing that I would be concerned about, if you have giant spinning turbines in the ocean, how is it not just chopping up all the fish that are just swimming through?
Yeah, well.
And then I know other people have concerns about, like, the sounds that it makes and that interrupting kind of normal patterns of life for the sea life.
My sense is there are probably ways around all of those things. It's just they add to the expense and the vulnerability, you know? So it's like there's usually a way you can avoid. But, you know, anytime you have sort of like humans interfering in an environment with construction, there's going to be massive disruption to the natural environment anyway, right? So, I think that's a valid concern. The sediment flow one is particularly important, though. Yeah. Sediment here basically means dirt that's floating in the water and being laid down. And so if you live in a city that has a river move through it and you're an avid walker, you'll notice there's a lot of changes in the river over time. Like they actually move as the dirt moves around with the water. Okay. In the U.S., permitting and regulatory processes can be slow and confusing, making it difficult to get new projects started. So basically, you have this political sort of environment where you have to get through the rules, but you also have to get through protesting people. So they mention here specifically fishing communities, you know, who obviously, you know, they need to catch the fish. Anything that's affecting the fish will affect their livelihoods. And unclear jurisdiction. Basically, you know, who gets to decide? The city, the state, the central government, who gets to decide? But there has been progress very slowly in key regions here. So they are making some progress, but it is not quick. However, and this is in relation to our title, where we found out that the tide was rising for this, momentum is building. Momentum means we're moving forward more and more quickly. Garrett, how are we moving forward? Or I guess more specifically, where?
This would be in Scotland, France, and Canada. They've invested in pilot projects, potentially somewhat like we talked about in Japan earlier, though maybe a bit on the smaller side. And the U.S. Department of Energy is researching opportunities along American coastlines.
Yeah, pilot projects are sort of experimental. Mm-hmm. The one in Japan was commercial, so they're up and running as a business. These are more to discover how workable the plan is. And so new modular turbine designs are helping to lower the costs and speed up installation. And that is an important factor to continue the development of tidal technology. So listeners, over the next couple of years, I think you can probably look forward to more news and breakthroughs in this area of tidal technology. It'll probably become a much more household term, meaning we'll be hearing it and saying it a lot more often. That brings us to the end of our program for today, but we hope you'll join us again soon for another Advanced Studio Classroom. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Garrett.
Saying goodbye for now.
Goodbye.